Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
There we go.
Here's John Williams.
Nah, I couldn't come up with one. It's 106. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Lord have mercy.
We're sitting on Michigan Avenue. We appreciate you tuning in to WGN Radio. We're here weekdays on the John Williams Show until 3, 1 to 3. Saturdays, tune me in from 10 a.m. till noon and on Facebook. I'm King John. If you follow me on Facebook, you'll see a couple of things. One is at WGN Radio's Facebook page. You'll see the video that we broadcast live earlier today, and that is of a special Mincing Rascals podcast we recorded as a fundraiser for the Salvation Army. Sarah Tiemann is on our team, and she helped us coordinate and do all of that. How much money did we raise, Sarah?
We're up to $1,005 right now, John.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
Let's
How about them
money.
Apples? Whoop, 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 $1,005. And they were crowing over at Facebook because somebody else had made $1,000.
Yep.
We made $1,005.
We're them.
Mic drop. So good for us. Good for, you know, really good for you guys. You were the ones that all donated. Some of you put your name. Some of you said anonymous. We appreciate all of your donations, large and small. It's actually kind of a, it was a good episode, I think, of Mincing Rascals. And I think it was very fun to see it happen because everybody was so animated. And we had a nice camera that was able to get a kind of a nice view of everybody. So thanks to Mike and to, gosh, Ben and you.
Dave Marzullo.
Tabitha, Dave Marzullo, and certainly LFR producer for putting that together, as well as the Rascals.
And people can still donate, too.
Yeah, in fact, some donations have since come in. So if you want to help the Salvation Army do the most good, like me on Facebook, check out the WGN Radio Facebook page. On my Facebook page, two things I've posted. One is the new tax plan eliminates the Obamacare mandate. Will you opt out now and why? We're going to read some of the comments on the air, and we'll talk about this with your phone calls in a little bit. But first, we want to do this. So there is a parody of the Harry Potter series that has been going on for a while over at Water Tower Place. It's called Potted Potter. The reviews of it are really good. If you are a Harry Potter fan, call right now. We have tickets. But here's how you win tickets to this. You have to stump our celebrity panel of Harry Potter experts. Okay, I'll ask each of you to sign in. Tell us who you are and why you are a Harry Potter expert. What is your name, ma'am?
I am Julie Stern.
What do you do here, Julie?
I am the traffic manager, which means I'm in charge of scheduling all the wonderful commercials you hear every day.
Oh, thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
That's how we pay our bills. And you've read the entire series?
I've read the entire series. I've watched the movies a ton of times. I don't know if I'd so much call myself an expert as a fangirl, more of a fan than studying each little minutia. But I love them, and I've seen them all.
Everybody gets very defensive when you say they're an expert, because they say, well, now maybe I don't know.
Because there are people that are crazy experts out there.
Okay, so if you are, here's your chance. Call in, and if you can stump them, you have to know the answer to the question, too. But if you got a question they don't know the answer to, you win tickets to Potted Potter. Your name is?
Sarah Tiemann. And I'm the promotions and PR manager here at the station. So I'm helping my... Well, let's see. My Harry Potter knowledge probably dates back to 2000 when I read the first book.
You read them all? You've seen the movies?
Yep, seen them all the movies. In fact, I was probably a super nerd because before book 7 came out, I reread all of them and wrote down every character I came across, every spell.
You're taking notes.
I have 12 Word documents of all the research I did before book 7 came out.
Jazz, who are you and why are you here?
I am Jasmine Cooper. I am the executive producer for Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder.
I didn't know you were a Harry Potter fan.
I am. I also wanted to get a tattoo, the little lightning bolt. I also wanted one right on my arm. So, yeah, I am a huge Harry Potter fan.
Let them all, seen them all?
Read them all, seen them all. I've stood in line for the books, and my sister has footage of me doing that with everybody else in their capes and their hats and everything. She still has that. That was like 2005.
All right, Elif, hit the music. Oh, and by the way, Elif Garris, our producer, is also going to be one of the panel of Harry Potter experts. Elif's been studying. Sarah went back and read some of the books.
Mm-hmm, I did.
For the very purpose of this. That's the kind of commitment that for a 10-minute segment you really don't have to have.
Well, that's what makes me a nerd.
Jazz, when's the last time you stuck your nose in one of the books?
Oh, gosh. I want to say about 6 months ago, actually.
Really? So you're just kind of rereading them every now and then?
I reread and then I watch the movies.
Julie, do you do stuff like that?
I watch the movies a lot, but
do
I've only
really?
Read the books once many years ago.
All right, Elif, hit the music when you were ready. 3, 2, 1, woof. Hit it. Kim, you're on WGN Radio. How are you? Stand by. I'm not hearing Kim.
This is the best part of the song.
Is it really?
Yes.
Violetta, you know this stuff too? Violetta, if you want to chime in, pardon me, I didn't mean to exclude you. If you want to be one of our celebrity panel of experts, you can be.
All right, thank you.
So we got five great minds, none of them mine, all here ready to try and answer your questions. But I don't hear Kim on line two. Hey, Kim, are you there? Okay, we'll come back to Kim and let's go to Kaylee. Hey, Kaylee, are you there?
I am.
All right, Kaylee, what's your question for our gang?
My question is, who wrote Quidditch Through the Ages?
Wait, what?
What is Quidditch Through the Ages?
It's one of the textbooks.
It's one of the what? I'm sorry, what did you say?
It's one of their books that they read in the books. It's also one that J.K. Rowling published.
Oh, okay, so J.K. Rowling
the
did this.
Author in the book.
Right, this isn't the name of one. Oh, but it's a book that actually exists in print in real life?
It is, but it's also a book that exists in the book series.
They reference it. All right. Anybody know?
I'm going to go Kenilworth Wispy.
It's Kenilworthy West, so that's...
Close enough. I will be the judge on this. I'm going to give her credit for it, okay?
All right.
She didn't like that, but I do need to say that.
The opinion... that's too bad, then she doesn't win, right?
Correct, she does not. The opinion of the judge will be final. And if you're close in my world, this is why I would be a terrible host of, like, Jeopardy, because I think they bust people's balls way too much on that. Let's talk to Tim. You're on WGN. Tim, stump our panel of experts.
Hi. So my question is... one of Neville Longbottom's family members threw him out a window to see if he was a squib. Who threw him out the window?
I believe it was his uncle.
That's what I was going to say, too. His uncle, right?
Yeah.
What's his uncle's... Do we need to know?
I don't think it gives the name.
It does.
Oh.
But it is the uncle?
Yes. It's his great-uncle, Algy.
Algy. Duh.
I don't think that was in the movie.
Well, duh. Thank you for the question. I appreciate you joining us, Tim. I'm going to say that they knew it's the uncle is sufficient.
That happened in book one.
They didn't know the name. I'm going to go from you then to Christine on line five. Christine, can you stump our celebrity panel of Harry Potter experts?
I think I can. When Dumbledore came to collect Harry from Privet Lane, he complimented some plantings growing in the Dursleys' yard. What were they?
Can I take this one?
Yeah, go ahead, Steve. That one's yours.
That was the medicinal marijuana.
Let me ask you this. Do you know, Christine, the answer to that, or did you, like, dig that up for the purpose of stumping these people?
No. My family, we're kind of Harry Potter dig deep geeks with symbolism and that kind of thing. So it's actually important.
Is it petunias?
Is it petunias?
No, it is not petunias.
Okay, but that does not count because Violetta is now
I'm not really playing.
Kicked off the celebrity panel.
Not you, Petunia.
Okay, so, Jazz, any guess on that one?
I'm going to pass to Sarah because Sarah is, like, ready to jump out of her seat for this answer.
No.
Julie,
any
clue on this?
I remember. I have no idea on this one.
I remember. I know where it happens on the book. I could tell you probably what page.
Yeah.
All right, what is the plant?
The plant is called an agapanthus. It is a genus of flower commonly known as Lily of the Nile.
Ah.
And he remarks to the Dursleys that their plants are thriving.
Yes. I remember that line.
Good one.
That's good.
Harry, Lily, thriving. Yeah.
All right. Studio plant. Christine, I'm putting you on hold. Talk to Elif off the air, and we'll get you those tickets, okay?
Okay.
Hey, congratulations. Let's talk to Kim. Hey, Kim, you're on WGN. Hi. You know, I don't think that line is working.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, Kim. You're on the air.
How many Death Eaters does Harry Potter encounter at the Ministry of Magic and Order of the Phoenix?
How many what? How many
Death Eaters? 142, but again, I'm not playing.
Jazz.
100.
100. What do you ladies think? 100? Is it more? Is it less?
Oh,
boy, it looks like Kim's about to win herself a pair of tickets to the show.
Can she repeat the question?
How many Death Eaters did somebody encounter at some place?
Did Harry Potter encounter in the Ministry of Magic in Order of the Phoenix?
Okay.
I think six.
Six. Oh, we're going to go with six as our final answer.
11.
Oh!
Oh! It was only off by half.
I'm going to say that is close enough that... It is still... No, that's a bad answer. That's wrong. Kim gets the tickets.
She
Let's hear
wins.
It for Kim. All right.
How old is Kim?
How old are you, Kim?
8.
All right, good job.
We're not taking tickets from an 8-year-old. Okay, Kim, hold on. I want you to talk to our producer off the air, okay?
Okay,
congratulations. Okay, so 116. Will you guys come back at 210? We'll do it again?
Definitely.
Sure will.
Okay,
really.
So thank you. Nice job. I can tell we have a good knowledge pool here. Mm-hmm. Jazz, are you going to be down the hall? You'll stumble in here again in an hour.
Yeah.
And ladies, you take the elevator down and come see us in a little bit.
We will be here.
Okay, more tickets to Potted Potter at Water Tower Place at 210. Tell your Potter fans, family, and friends, and we will do that then. Whew. We've had a lot of projects here today at the radio station. The live cast on Facebook of the Mincing Rascals podcast took a lot of wind out of our sails. Okay, I'm going to go back to what happened today. They signed the president and members of Congress are having a ceremony where they're going to, anoint the new tax bill, and that'll be swell. One of the consequences of that will be that the mandate for Obamacare is going to go away. You do not have to buy health insurance anymore. And I'm asking you this question. What are you going to do about that? Are you going to opt out, or will you continue to buy insurance? The question is, are you going to opt out and why? Are you going to opt out of Obamacare and why? You will not have to. It's weird because my understanding is that the law still says you have to have insurance, but there's no penalty. They're not going to deduct any wages from your salary or your income tax return. They're not going to tax you more. You won't pay your tax. You won't buy insurance, and there will be no penalty to you. And the federales aren't going to come and round you up. So while you will be, this is my understanding of it, breaking the law, it will be without consequences, and you're going to get away with it. So, are you going to get away with it? I mean, if you don't like the healthcare premium that you're paying right now, you no longer have to pay it. Are you going to stop? Are you going to start? My number is 312-981-7200. Just give me some feedback. What do you say about this on WGN? Penny said she works in a hospital. What about patients who are without insurance? Let's try you again. Hey, Penny, this is John. Are you still there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call. I work in a hospital, and if somebody who goes to a hospital because they're sick and they don't have insurance, then how does that care get paid for if they're not going to be able to go on to Medicaid status? Because isn't Medicaid going to be cut as well?
I don't know the answer to that, but let's just think about a minute, somebody who would have had insurance but now doesn't. They show up at your hospital.
Can't turn people away.
Yeah, so, I mean, what did used to happen? What happens now?
Well, people who have insurance, part of their premium goes to cover people who don't have insurance.
Right. Yeah, I suppose
is that really fair?
If that horse has left the barn, but let's think about that. So if I go to a hospital, maybe the emergency room, I don't have coverage, the hospital's going to treat me, then everybody else's premiums or costs are going to go up to cover the people that are doing that. And that's what's going to happen. Hopefully it won't happen so much that I'm not going to notice a nick, but yeah, I'll bet I'm going to have to pay more, right?
I don't know. Unless they come up with another idea for coverage, which I don't see happening.
Well, if they did, it would have been in a comprehensive health care bill, but they weren't able to pass that. So all they were able to do is defund the mandate so that you don't have to pay if you don't want to. That's the only thing that they've been able to do about health care.
But maybe somebody else listening knows the answer to that question.
Yeah, I'm glad you called. Thanks, Penny. We'll try and help you out.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Think about that. That's a bill that you have to pay, and if you don't want to, you don't have to pay it anymore, your health premium. But maybe you want to get in now because premiums they expect are going to go up. So maybe you would be smart to right now lock in some insurance coverage, at least for the year. But come February when this bill, or January 1st, I guess, when this bill goes into effect, Steve, I hope I'm not misleading people. Some of the folks from Kaiser Healthcare are going to join us after 2:30. So we'll talk to our friends at Kaiser about this. They're very good on these sorts of things. But if you don't want to pay for it, not only are you going to get a tax increase, but you won't have to buy insurance if you don't want to. And I suppose most people that can buy insurance will continue to buy insurance the way they used to. And most Americans are getting it through their employer anyway. But for the people that were buying it on the exchange, yesterday you had to, and come the 1st of January you won't. At least you'll have to, but they're not going to penalize you when you don't. So you'll get to save that premium. Are you going to do that? That's my question on Facebook, too, and you can comment there. The new tax plan, according to an article at money.cnn.com, says they will eliminate the Obamacare mandate, and then they wrote a piece about what this means. How many people are going to opt out is up for debate. We really won't know. Some estimates are that as few as a few million. Other estimates are as many as 10 million people will no longer buy health insurance. The idea of not having health insurance, and this comes from a guy who was in his late 50s, right? There's three of us that are on my company insurance plan. And when I came here to this radio station, I had to switch insurance companies. And it was fantastically complicated. I could not believe how many forms and people and online things I had to do to go through to make sure I transitioned from one set of coverage to the other. And it appeared as though there would be a period of days where I would not have coverage. I was awake in bed at night worrying about that. That if for 1 minute, and I know way too many Americans live like this every single day. I don't know how they sleep at night. I don't know how you sleep at night. But the idea that for a few minutes, days, whatever, a week maybe, we wouldn't have coverage because of this transition problem I was having, it terrified me. I mean, right? If that day you slip on a banana peel or you're diagnosed with cancer or something, then what would you do? You don't have coverage. And that worried the bejesus out of me. The idea that some of you to save would opt for that is something I can't comprehend. But again, maybe you don't have enough money. And so you're just saying, I know this is foolhardy, but if I don't have to pay that premium anymore, I'm not going to. Or maybe I'm young and I'm healthy and I'm not going to let somebody tell me what to do, so I'm not going to pay for it. I just don't want to. You don't have to pay for it. You do not have to buy insurance. I'm wondering what you're going to do. A couple more calls here. This is Joe. You're on WGN. Hi, Joe.
Hi, John. How are you?
What's up, Joe?
I have a story. I'm self-employed, so I had to buy insurance, an individual policy. I had Blue Cross Blue Shield through the insurance, and my middle daughter became uninsured, so we bought her a separate policy through Blue Cross while she was uninsured.
Yeah.
And because you have to have insurance, we did the right thing. We got her the insurance. When she gained her employment and no longer needed the Blue Cross, I called to cancel her policy. Now, on the phone, in the conversation, I told the lady, make sure you cancel her policy because we both have the same last name and they're the exact same policies, except it's two separate policies.
Sure, but it's her on yours. Yeah, keep going.
Right. So they, in turn, wound up canceling my insurance policy for myself, my youngest daughter, and my wife.
Yeah.
In doing so, somebody realized they screwed up, and they automatically put me into this Obamacare, into this marketplace insurance, which was half the coverage. I went to pick up an insulin prescription for my diabetes, and my prescription was $980 opposed to $40 the month before. That's how I knew that they had screwed up. Well, after 27 different people between Blue Cross and the marketplace and 96 hours of phone time, they denied me coverage, both Blue Cross and the marketplace, and I wound up having to go through my wife's employer to get insurance through them outside of the open enrollment period.
I want to ask you about those numbers you just threw out. Were you just speaking figuratively, or were you literally logging phone calls and hours that you spent?
I logged every minute I was on the phone.
That is so screwed up. And you're telling me that with the insurance on the exchange, it went from $40 to $900 for your insulin?
Yes.
Wow.
First of all, my premium from 2016.
No. Hold on, Joe, because I don't have time. But last thing then, where are you right now? How much are you paying now for your insurance coverage?
We are back down to where the original coverage was, but through United Healthcare instead of Blue Cross Blue Shield.
That's amazing.
We are now on a group policy through my wife's employer.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And give me the number of people you talked to and how many hours? 27 and 90?
27 different people, 96 hours of phone time.
I'm sorry, man. Oh, I'm glad you hung in there. I mean, what are you going to do? You've got to. When I get to be king, that is going to go more smoothly. When I get to be king, Steve Bertrand is going to be in charge of the phone banks at the insurance place, and that's going to run more smoothly.
We can't hold out much longer, man. Just be king.
The paperwork is tied up in Cook County. It's 1:30. Thanks for the call. We're having a conversation about this on my Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook. Tell me what you're going to do now that the mandate is gone, and we'll ask an expert about this later in the show. Phil Vitale is here. He does a lot of good over at the Chicago Tribune as the restaurant critic. Hi, Phil.
Hi there.
We've invited Phil to join us on Wednesdays and talk about food. A delicious set of pictures in the print edition of the Tribune today. If you don't go to these restaurants, just eat the newspaper.
Please. And then buy another one.
That rolled boneless pork loin stuffed with pistachios, sweet spices, and sausage. Oh, man.
Yeah. That's,
where was I when they took that picture upstairs?
That was Jean Marie Bronson's work, and that is, I've already grabbed a copy of that recipe for myself, seeing if I can if I can pull it off. I'm not going to Instagram it because it's not going to look like that.
I know. You know, those are things of art, aren't they?
Right.
Literally the cooking of them that well in that way, but also then the photography of them is beautiful.
Right. And Mark Graham doing the heavy lifting in the test kitchen to make sure that it photographs just right.
But that's not why I asked you in here. So that's dinner at home, and there's one way to cook a pork loin or shoulder, if you like. But let's just talk about a couple things that you've been writing about. One is, what is it, Bon Appetit said three best cheeseburger or hamburger places in the country?
Yes.
And one of them is in Chicago.
One of them is in Chicago.
Tell me about that.
That is the Dirty Burger featured at The Loyalist, which is just between Randolph Street and Lake Street on Ada Street. So actually only about 12 blocks west of the up till now reigning champion, which would be the burger at Au Cheval.
Au Cheval did a blended meat burger as well?
A two-patty burger, yes. I can't remember the meat blend exactly, but yeah. It's
I don't know why anybody doesn't do this anymore. In Minneapolis, where I lived for 8 years and most recently for 4 years, the best burger in that city is also a blend of short rib, hamburger, and bacon,
mm-hmm.
and maple syrup and old sneakers. I don't know what they put in there, but it's a blended meat burger. And it's a little more caramely, a little more maple-y, mm-hmm. a little just sweeter.
Chefs that do their own blending have a very specific texture and taste in mind.
Oh, man.
At different fat levels, depending on the kind of meat you have in there.
They feel very fatty.
And they can and they do it. As you probably know, the hamburger hop, which is a big part of Chicago Gourmet every September, is the so-called opening night event in which a dozen or more local chefs compete in a friendly competition to who can put together the coolest burger. And they all work with the same basic meat supplier for that contest, but they all have their own blend. I want this much chuck, I want this much short rib and ground beef. And
what do you think of it?
Oh, it's terrific. That's when I reviewed The Loyalist in October of 2016, I mentioned the burger specifically and said, I know everybody's crazy about the Au Cheval burger with good reason. He said, I said, I would come back to this one first.
Really?
And look at you. One year later, Bon Appetit catches up.
Yeah, no kidding. So three best, but the other two are in other cities.
Nashville and Charleston, South Carolina. I wouldn't book a flight just for that.
Dino's Cheeseburger in Nashville and Little Jack's Tavern in Charleston. So is this a big restaurant or is this kind of a small tavern-y thing too, where we're going now?
The Loyalist is smaller. It's two restaurants stacked atop each other. Smith is the owner's big, fancy chef menu, fabulous night out, one of the best restaurants in Chicago. And then the Loyalist is their casual drop-in, just below street level, got a really cool, dark vibe to it. And yeah, and they have a great burger, but they also have some other great stuff. Their chicken thighs are amazing.
Chicken thighs, I love chicken thighs.
Yeah, they do a great job.
What do they do with chicken thighs?
I forget.
Something
it's been
really
a while.
Good. 177 North Ada Street, 177 North Ada Street, the Loyalist, and the best burger in America, one of the top three, is called the Dirty Burger. It'll cost you $16. Is it Maillard Tavern that you also wrote about on North Milwaukee?
It's opening tomorrow.
Oh, so this is brand new. M-A-I-L-L. It looks like Mallard with an I.
It does. I keep writing Mallard when I start typing it, and I have to go back and fix it. It's either Maillard or Maillard. Maillard is named for a scientist. The Maillard effect is the chemical reaction, what happens that when you apply heat to proteins and sugars, and it gives you that caramelized, burny, toasty flavor on the exterior of meat. It's the same effect that makes toasted marshmallows so nice, that nice brown outside. That's the Maillard effect. What happens, you take protein and or sugars like that and apply heat, and it gives you another flavor that wouldn't be there otherwise.
Who knew?
Right. Who knew it had a name? We all knew if you toast a marshmallow, you get that.
Yeah,
we didn't know there was a genuine Maillard effect name for it.
And we like a little sizzle or maybe the thinnest crust on a burger that gives it a little more flavor. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. My druthers, I'm almost a black and blue guy, which is the steak is just got an absolute char on the outside and is still rare on the inside, which you only accomplish with really high heat for a very short time.
Yeah.
I want a good exterior char, and I want the meat still to be medium rare.
So this is Meyer Tavern. So are we talking about hamburgers again then here?
We are. And he also does fries, and he does all sorts of things in which heat is applied to protein, which is nothing new, but he's using a steam-injected flat griddle to get to do his burgers, which puts them on more surface contact, so you get a little more even.
But he's not frying them then.
Yeah, he is. He's throwing some beef fat on there first.
Oh, sure, okay.
Uh-huh.
And these are 8-ounce burgers, duck fat fries, sandwiches, and chili at Maillard Tavern on North Milwaukee, 494 North Milwaukee. You've sampled the food yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
And instead of it's an 8-ounce burger, but they consist of 2 4-ounce patties.
What's the point of that?
Because you have 4 fried sides, so you have double the Maillard effect.
Oh,
you have more exterior.
Okay, I got it. Good. You guys also did a speed dating, you called it.
Yeah.
And that is, okay, we didn't get to all of these this year. We have quick reviews of restaurants we've been carrying around our notebooks that we want you to know before the year ends. Because I presume they're, I don't know, pretty good or maybe not.
They're worthy. They were important openings for the year, and we didn't get a chance to weigh in on everybody. So many restaurants, so many weeks. And we next week is all going to be about my New Year's Eve thing, my big Save the Tables extravaganza. So this week, really our last chance to tell people about cool places to...
And there are 6 of them on this. Let me get your thoughts on that, Phil Vitale, after this. 3 things we want to accomplish before you get out of here, Phil. One is I want to talk about the 6 restaurants you just alluded to. Number 2 is I want to know about what you're doing next week.
Sure.
Which is the Save the Date, where you actually reserve tables.
Right.
And your readers, our listeners, can get them. And number 2, what do you make of this story? It's kind of related to what you do. It's kind of not. Somebody posted a bad review in Indiana of a inn that they stayed in. It was a little hotel. It was an inn. And it looked quaint and charming online. So the family goes and stays there. Like a lot of places, they say, hey, post your review. If you love the place, tell everybody. And so they did. They posted their review. And it was reasonable, but they had a terrible experience. And they said, here's what our experience was. I'm not sure if it was on that Inn's site or if it was on Yelp, but it went mm-hmm. public.
TripAdvisor could have been on that, too.
It might have been that.
Mm-hmm.
And the Inn then charged their credit card $350 as a penalty. What? And they have in the language of the contract when you, you know, who reads the fine print on anything?
Mm-hmm.
But did you know that when you go to some places, they can penalize you for a bad review?
Really?
And they charge them $350.
Wow.
And this has happened more than once. So now we're going to do a show on this. The people are suing them through the State Consumer Protection Bureau in Indiana.
Yeah, this talk about a slam dunk.
I know. How can that be?
How can I get in on this? How can I get part of this class action? Because I want them suing me. I want standing to go into court.
I was going
to
say,
and
Phil,
say my First Amendment rights are now restricted by this contract. You can't do it.
Phil, can you imagine the money John could raise if he could charge everyone who complained about his show?
Oh, my goodness. Ending hunger today.
Yeah, that's right. You can send me those nasty texts that we generally don't read, but I'm going to hit you. I'm going to get you. Isn't that amazing? And they said that, here's what they said, that we reserve the right to fix the problem before you complain about it. Because mm-hmm. what if you said the place has bed bugs and then the next day they had it fixed and then they don't have bed bugs but your review is out there?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's still legitimate comment on your experience.
I'm afraid so.
You should have fixed the bed bugs before they got
right.
there.
You see these welts? These are bed bugs. So I get to say, when the welts go away, maybe I'll pull my review. But not a moment before that.
Sprint through some of these restaurants with me. So in the speed dating mm-hmm. restaurants that you all experienced that you haven't written about yet, what did you like?
I liked Ronero, which is sort of Cuban, just kind of a little like cherry picking of Central and South American flavors. Ronero is someone who's dedicated to the distilling of rum. A master Ronero is someone who's really got the rum distilling thing down.
R-O-N-E-R-O, Ronero.
Right, so refers to a gentleman who knows how to, knows his way around a rum distillery. It's more of a, I wouldn't say it's more of a drinking experience than an eating experience, but it's certainly more of a party atmosphere than it is of a sit down. If you want to have a nice conversation and have a sip of rum, go somewhere else or show up on Tuesday. But on Saturdays, they tend to go with get larger tables. It's a real, very celebratory. I mean, it's good energy. If you like that, it's great. But if it's your 20th anniversary, possibly not.
You like the experience, but know what you're going to get when you go there.
That's what I try to do every week.
And what is the food like, generally? What am I going to eat when I go there?
You might get some empanadas with potato and ground beef. You can get something like the carne ronero, which is a skirt steak with chimichurri sauce, except the chef whips some beef fat into the chimmy, so you get a really rich chimichurri sauce.
Your colleague wrote about Barrio in this, or is it Barrio? Bill Daly, I think, wrote that piece. What about Barrio?
Barrio comes from the Dynamic Group, the people who have Siena Tavern, Bar Siena, Prime and Provisions, and this is their sort of lively, casual Mexican concept right very close to Siena Tavern. They were able to get a hold of a space and say, what have we not done? What would be fun to do? But the restaurant's more ambitious than it needs to be, given the neighborhood and given what they've already got in terms of fan base. They're trying their hand at some Oaxacan cooking. They're doing a mole here and there. It's not strictly traditional. They take license in favor of flavors they like to eat, rather than if you're a purist in terms of Mexican cuisine, you're going to walk in there and say, "Wait a minute, nobody does that this way." Doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just not authentic.
Is it worth it?
Bill Daly liked it a lot.
Oh, that's right. That wasn't your review. So right. Bill gave it a nice review. That's Barrio. You guys just mentioned one other here. I'll just run through them. You did Beatnik, The Delta, mm-hmm. Gideon's Suite, and Ronero. What? Mention one more for me.
Gideon's Suite I mentioned because of the pedigree. Graham Elliott, who you see mostly criticizing other people's cooking on TV, but had the Graham Elliott Bistro and had two Michelin stars at one point in his life. He's behind it, along with Matthias Merges, who had A10 down in Hyde Park, had the Yushou restaurants. And between the two of them, Matthias was Charlie Trotter's right-hand man for at least 12 years. I mean, there's some serious cooking chops going on behind this. And it's looks like it's almost kind of like a conceptual extension of Matthias's Billy Sunday in Logan Square. Serious bites and then a very ambitious cocktail program.
You like that place?
That we Louisa did that, and she was she seemed quite smitten.
That's 841 West Randolph. 45 seconds. Next Monday? Is it this coming Monday?
Next Wednesday.
Wednesday. A week from today, what's going to happen in the Tribune?
My annual, this will be for the 17th straight year, my annual Save the Tables feature runs next Wednesday, just ahead of New Year's Eve. And what I have done is gotten an extraordinary number and extraordinary high-quality restaurants to agree to set aside a table or tables in my name. And there, all it is the reservation. You don't get a free meal. You don't get a complimentary drink. You don't get nothing. You pay for the whole thing. But I've got 8 o'clock tables for restaurants that you have no chance of getting a reservation
for. What day?
For New Year's Eve.
Oh, for New Year's Eve.
It's all for New Year's Eve. I have so many, you would not believe how many restaurants I have putting in there. And what you have to do is then I release the names and the phone numbers, and you call and keep calling until you get a hold of a human being and say, I would like Phil's table.
First come, first serve.
First come, first served.
So I need to go online maybe, or?
You can do both. It'll be in the paper.
Wednesday. Wednesday's paper.
When it hits your driveway or hits the place you buy your paper at, it'll be in Wednesday's paper, and it'll be online that morning as well.
If I don't see it before the holiday, Merry Christmas and Happy
you
New
too.
Year, Phil. Don't you hate it when you take a day off and then you're not well?
Really?
And so it's nice that you're able to recover and get better without compromising your work, but doggone it.
Monday, I kept saying, this is not a sick day. This is a vacation day.
And there you were, not feeling well.
No.
You sound great, Mr. Bertrand. We'll listen in on the president on the White House lawn in this hour, so stick around for that. But right now, before we do anything, we're about to play the Open. I just want to prime the pump. Call right now, 312-981-7200, if you want tickets to see Potted Potter. It's a Harry Potter parody that they show that's downtown Chicago at Water Tower Place, at the theater there. I've got tickets for it, but you need to stump our panel of Harry Potter experts. So you need to ask them a question they don't know the answer to. If you can stump our experts, you win tickets to Potted Potter. Okay, I'll have hit it.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Here we go.
Here's John Williams.
Big thoughts. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4 experts here. You know, I don't give a... I'm not a Harry Potter fan, but I'm not a Harry Potter hater. I don't know it as well as you ladies do. And I am amazed at how much people know about this. You know what I mean? I mean, I almost don't care what the subject is. I'm just impressed that people know a lot about anything. And what you all know about Harry Potter is pretty impressive. Here is our panel of experts. Go.
Julie Stern, traffic manager.
Sign in.
Sarah Tiemann, promotions manager.
Jazz.
Jasmine Cooper, Bill and Lef, Wendy Snyder, and I'm the executive producer.
Okay, cool. And now, by the way, I didn't tell Elf to do this. Can you play the music, Elf, our Harry Potter theme song as we get ready to do this? Here we go. And all the phone lines are ringing now. Remember, we'll send you to Water Tower Place to watch Potted Potter, the Harry Potter parody, if you can stump our panel of experts. You all answered, I think, the first three questions when we did this after the 1 o'clock news. And Jazz, who I would have figured to be the very best of you, I mean, Jazz heard we were doing this. She goes, I need to be in that panel.
Oh, yeah. I got downstairs pretty quickly.
You didn't answer any of them.
I answered one of them.
Were you on one of them? Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted everybody to get an equal chance. So
here's you are as studied as any of them. But the thing about this is some of the questions. I mean, how many pages are in the Harry Potter series? Probably 5,000 pages in the Harry Potter series of books.
If not more than that. Because book one is the shortest. Book one and two are the shortest, and then book four is one of the biggest.
Is that 1,000 pages or about that? I just remember kids putting these in their backpacks, and it was bigger than they were, some of those little kids that were buying those things. Yep. So you've got thousands of pages of minutia, a whole nother world of detail. And then somebody said, okay, how many of the things were in the one thing on the one? And what was the name of the plant that was in the one garden in the one book? And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. But and the funny thing is, the people who are asking those questions, they knew that. Not because they looked it up. That just, it sounded like it was knowledge they already had on board.
Yeah, that is part of their soul.
Yep.
Yeah. The Harry Potter world.
Is it part of your soul, Julie?
The movies are.
Really, you like the movies more than the books?
Yeah.
Really? Would you say that, Sarah?
No, definitely not. But I'm books all the way.
What about you, Jazz?
Books.
Yeah.
I saw movies were good though, right? First.
Oh yeah, that's really.
And I usually have a rule that I won't read it after I see it, but my husband stayed on me long enough that I finally read the books. So.
Okay, where do we start, Elif? Who's going to go first?
Go with line,
line
two.
Two. Okay, we'll start with Matt. Matt, you're on WGN. Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm good, King John. How are you?
Good. Thanks for listening. Shoot a question at the ladies. If you stump them, you win tickets. Go.
Ladies, what did Malfoy try to poison Dumbledore with but accidentally poisoned Ron Weasley with in Harry Potter and the Half-Blooded Prince?
So you want the name of the poison that he used?
The delivery method.
It was in the mead, wasn't it? It was in the holiday mead.
Oak matured mead. You're right.
Woo! Yay, one for Jules. Yay.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate your call. Good try. Don't come in here with some weak stuff. We've got the experts. Don't walk in here with any weak trivia. Thumbs up, Jules.
Nice job, thank you. Jules. Thank you.
Okay, we'll go from line two to line three. Cindy, you're on WGN. What's your question for our experts?
Hi, John. Great to talk to you.
Likewise. Thanks for calling.
The question is, how much did the Weasley twins bet in the Quidditch World Cup?
How much did they win?
No, how much did they bet?
How much did the Weasley twins bet in the Quidditch Cup? Do you want a dollar or some sort of currency amount? Is that it?
Yes.
You knew this all by yourself there, Cindy?
Well, I have two kids who are huge Harry Potter fans, so.
And so you said, hey, kids, what would be a good question? And they said, Mom, ask how much money, blah, 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 right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that would have been at the beginning of Goblet of Fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't remember an amount.
Okay, I'm going to give you ladies about 10 more seconds. Violetta, you've been chiming in earlier. Do you want to go ahead and give us an amount? How much did they bet in the Quidditch thing?
Well, it's in pounds, so it's hard to tell.
it's British. She doesn't have the conversion.
It would be in galleons, sickles, and nuts.
Oh, that's the currency there.
In the Wizarding World. I'm going to say 37 galleons, 15 sickles, and 3 nuts is my guess.
That is correct.
All right, Sarah.
I mean, how did you pick that number?
How did you pick that number?
That's what's in the book.
You remembered.
We're going to Dan next. You're on WGN. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi. What house was Newt Scamander in at Hogwarts? He was the author of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
What is it?
Well, that's easy. Hufflepuff, right?
Hufflepuff?
Of course. You guys are good.
Let's go to Jeff on line four. Jeff, you're on WGN. Go.
Hello. Can you tell me what in J.K. Rowling, what is the K about?
What does the K stand for? What does that mean? What's the K all about? Anybody know? Oh, that's kind of a different question. That's about the author, not the series. Do you guys know?
Thinking Kathleen?
Is it Kathleen?
And which is that?
The K stands for Kathleen.
Meaning, though, what's behind the K? That's what I meant. Oh. Behind the name Kathleen.
Why is it Kathleen? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, that's what I was meaning.
Because her parents like the name Kathleen?
I didn't actually think they stood for anything.
Yeah.
So I'm getting schooled here.
Okay, so what's it stand for, Jeff?
That's her grandmother's name.
Oh.
First name.
I see. Okay, what a terrible question. I don't like the question. I want to throw it out in principle, but you did stump our experts. So hold on. You're going to the show, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Stay right there. And finally, let's go with...
That was a trick question.
It's kind of a... Yeah, what a stinky question. And he's going. Sarah, you're on WGN. What's your question, Sarah? You're on the air.
Hi. What is another name for Monkshood and Wolfsbane?
What's another name for Monk's Good and Wolfsbane?
Monkshood.
Whatever. Okay. No, I'm sorry. It's just a whole vocabulary. I don't know. I'm working here for you. Yes, no?
Jules is not now.
Sarah, yes, no.
Well,
Jazz, yes, no.
I'm going to pass.
Both used in potion making. Going with the herbs.
Okay, we're going. Those are herbs.
Well, the answer what I was actually looking for was aconite.
Aconite.
Okay.
That's another name.
Oh, that's the other name for them, not herbs, yeah. Not potions.
Got it.
Congratulations, right. Sarah. Woo! Okay, that wraps it up. I'm done with this game. Hey, Sarah, nice going. Go see the show on us and have a really good time, okay?
I'm a little jealous.
You. Well, you're jealous why?
That she gets to go to the show.
Oh, mm-hmm. We don't have tickets floating around that we could give to Julie?
No, we're going
to
find some tickets.
Jazz could go too. Jazz, Thanks for coming in. Nice to see you.
No problem. Thank you.
Will you call Bill and Wendy, or Bill and whoever is filling in for Wendy these days? When does Wendy come back, by the way?
She should be back on the 2nd.
Oh, good. Right after the 1st of the year then.
Yeah.
Tuesday the 2nd, I believe it is.
Correct.
When you call that show, you talk to you. We sometimes hear you on the air. Congratulations. Thanks for helping us out.
Thank you.
And Sarah and Julie, thanks for helping out as well.
No problem. It's fun.
It's 217. This is WGN. Is that Bob Iacino on line number 7? Hey, Bob, it's John Williams. How are you?
Good. How are you, John?
Good. I want to talk to you about Bitcoin for just a second. Before I do, I'm looking at my producer, Elif. Listen to this. The woman who called in on our Harry Potter quiz, and she offered up the question, what was the bet between two of them on something, and there was some dollar or some Harry Potter currency amount?
Yeah, you're talking about the currency. Yeah,
right.
You want to know what that is?
If that lady is still listening, I want her to call back because I have a question for her.
Okay.
If she is still listening, I want her to call back. I have a question for her.
Well, after you insulted Harry Potter, I don't think she's listening anymore.
Did I insult Harry Potter, do you
yes.
think? I did. It sounded like that. I said I'm not a fan, but I didn't mean it that way. I'm going to try that again. I'm not a big fan of the Harry Potter series, but I'm happy that you all are.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't sound like that. But why would anybody be against the Harry Potter series? Bob, did you read the Harry Potter books when you were a kid?
I did not, because I was an adult.
I know, but that was one of the interesting things about
I'm older than I look, John, but I look great.
But the the Harry Potter phenomenon was interesting because you thought that was a book for kids, but adults dove into that thing right away, too.
Yeah, they really did.
I just wasn't one of them. You were probably reading books about finance and stuff like that. You are a partner at, what is it, Pathway Trading? Is that what it is?
Path Trading Partners.
Path Trading Partners, and you are the chief market strategist there.
I am.
You've been trying to explain Bitcoin to us for about 5 years now, and and it just went sort of public. It's been trading now on the two exchanges in Chicago, right?
Yes. A futures derivative of Bitcoin is trading.
A futures derivative of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. I read today that there are other, what kind of currencies do you call those? Virtual currencies or?
Cryptocurrencies, or you can call them digital currencies, but most people call them crypto.
And some of the other ones are doing even better than Bitcoin is, right?
On a percentage basis in the short term, yes.
There is a story in the Wall Street Journal today, and about Bitcoin, they say the problem for some people who, you know, for whatever reason, on a lark or somebody settled a bet or paid a bill and they gave them one of these cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin particularly, there are some people who have Bitcoin, but it's not like a bank where you go even online and reset your password. You don't really know who is Bitcoin anyway, right? So some people now, there's a story on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. A guy who put in a few hundred bucks a few years ago is now worth $300,000 in Bitcoin. His problem, he can't remember the password.
Right.
He's got a supercomputer running every permutation on his account to try and unlock it. Because you can't.
He may use $150,000 in power before he finds out.
He said he will be 300 years old at the rate it's going before every combination is. Do you know anything about this? Like, is it difficult to remember or unlock your password if you don't remember it?
So similar to cash, there's two places that you can hold cryptocurrencies. One is on an exchange. Okay, so for example, if you open an account with a bank, your cash is held in that bank. If that bank were to get robbed, your cash is gone. Now, banks will make that good, so will the FDIC. So there's a safeguard there. If you hold your cryptocurrencies in an exchange and that exchange gets hacked, you want to make sure you're with an exchange that will make you good on that, that will give you your cryptocurrencies back. So it can be stolen the same way cash can be stolen. The other way is to keep your cash in your wallet. There's something called a digital wallet, and it's actually a physical box that you carry around, and you have to be able to open that up and get your passcode in order to use or retrieve your digital currencies. You actually carry that around. So if somebody gets into your digital wallet, they can take your Bitcoin or your other cryptocurrencies the same way somebody can take your cash if they got your actual wallet.
Well, then I'm not going to carry that thing around. I mean, it would seem to me it'd be something like I go to Bitcoin.com, I type in my username, my password, and maybe a double authentication thing. It hits my phone back. And my password could be real complicated. It's more complicated than that, huh?
Right. In an exchange, they try to do, you know, triple and four level safeguards so that nobody hacks into your account, but they do get hacked. So it is easier to retrieve a password from an exchange. It's nearly impossible, as you referenced the story. It's impossible when you have a crypto wallet or a digital wallet and you've lost that password. It's pretty much impossible.
Well, can't you? So this happens, evidently. I mean, this guy, there's no resolution for this guy. Isn't there somebody at Bitcoin.com or the IT guy? I mean, they don't have a help desk?
No, again, you have to look at it very much like cash.
Yeah,
if you drop your wallet and there's $300 cash in there, Chicago police is going to laugh at you when you ask if you can get your cash back.
Yeah, but that's kind of ironic because this is the antithesis of cash. It's a digital, virtual, non-paper, non-tangible currency.
Here is the only difference between U.S. dollar and digital currencies. The only difference is that the U.S. dollar is accepted by the U.S. government for payment of a tax debt. Otherwise, they're almost identical, except you can hold cash, but paper cash has no value except that the U.S. government accepts it. If one day the U.S. government decided to stop accepting dollars, it would be just as worthless as a lot of people feel digital currencies are.
I can't pay I can't pay my income tax bill, say I owe, and I have $1,000 in Bitcoin. I can't transfer that Bitcoin to pay off my federal debt?
You cannot transfer that to the IRS, however you could convert it to dollars and send that to the IRS.
That way. And by the way, what's the exchange, or what's the NIC? What's the penalty you pay? If I have $1,000 in Bitcoin and I got to go through somebody to liquidate it, if I took $1,000 in coin to the grocery store and ran it through the machine, I lose 7%. What do I lose when I transfer Bitcoin to cash?
It depends on where you're transferring it. Some exchanges have higher fees than others. It's generally around $50 for Bitcoin, regardless of the amount you're changing. So if you change $20, you're going to lose. So you wouldn't want to change $20. Having said that, that's why some of these other cryptocurrencies are now doing better.
Yeah.
For example, there's a digital currency called Bitcoin Cash. It's a different currency. That one is virtually free.
Okay. And one last thing before I let you go. What's Bitcoin done this week on the market?
It's actually lower, and it's interesting because with the advent of the CME futures contract, which is larger, it's actually bringing Bitcoin. The rise in Bitcoin has slowed and almost stopped, at least in the short term, because now people can hedge, so they're actually selling Bitcoin and buying the futures. So it's down, actually. It's down right around 8% at this point.
And do you have any advice for our listeners if they are intrigued by this and they think, oh, hell, I got $50, I'm going to dive in? Should they? And if so, where do they go?
The first thing I would say is only dive into cryptocurrencies if you, whatever amount you're going to put in, you can afford to lose all of it, because all that has to happen is the government comes and says they're illegal and you've lost all your money. Having said that, I wouldn't do Bitcoin right now. I'd look to some of the others like Bitcoin Cash or Ethereum. You can do all or most of these on websites like Coinbase, Bitcoin.com.
Yeah.
There's more than one digital site that'll transact in cryptocurrencies like that.
Path Trading Partners, the chief market strategist, Bobby Acino. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate your time as always.
Thanks, John.
That lady called back who we were talking about when we were doing our Harry Potter quiz. Is that her on line one, Cindy? Hey, Cindy, it's John. How are you?
Hi, good. Thanks.
So how did you came up with that question with your kids, did you say?
Yeah, my son has been thinking about questions since yesterday when you mentioned the contest.
And so my panel is sitting here. And what was the question that you asked again?
Let's see. How much did the Weasley twins bet at the Quidditch World Cup?
Yeah. And we came up with the answer.
Yep.
Let me just offer this to you, Cindy. If I discover that the panel of experts went online to look that answer up, I'm going to give you the tickets too, okay?
Oh, that would be awesome.
Because the answer was so random and bizarre. I believe these ladies may have known that, but I also, everybody's got laptops and computers and phones around here, so I'm not sure if somebody dug that up. And I didn't spell out the rules. I'm not real worried if they did. But to be honest with you, that was a specific enough question. I didn't like the feel of the answer that they gave. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. I was kind of
you were wondering how did they know that, right?
Let's have a full blown investigation.
I know. So when Robert Mueller is free, what I'm going to ask him to do is
check our emails.
Is go through the emails, and then there'll be hearings and testimony. I'll call it fake news. Anyway, so hold on. We're going to get your name, phone number, and address. And if we can get you the tickets, I promise you we will, okay?
Thank you very much.
Hey, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Thanks for listening. And tell your kids we appreciate their playing along, okay?
I will, thanks.
Okay, Cindy, bye-bye. It's 2:30 on WGN. Still to come, if you opt... So what does this new tax bill do to the mandate? I've asked you if you're going to opt out on Facebook. And I've got a couple of answers about that after the news on GN. I just got a text from Lou Manfredini.
Uh-huh.
Says, I have an offer for you. Tomorrow morning, I want to be the first guest on your show for 3 minutes. Tomorrow afternoon.
I was going to say, first of all.
So I said, okay, but what are we doing? And I'm not sure what we're doing.
So wait, so he just came and said, I want the first 3 minutes of your show.
Right, and I said, sure, Lou, because it's, you know, it's Lou.
It's Lou, right.
What could go wrong?
Nothing.
Lou Manfredini says, yeah, I want 3 minutes of your show. My answer is yes.
He spins gold.
I got that same feeling I had in my stomach the first time I bought a car.
Well, I wouldn't have never done it.
By the way, the first time I bought a car, I thought, oh, man, what, $10,000?
Did he start by saying, I've got an idea?
Yeah, well, that's sort of
implied.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so be listening, everybody.
Is he going to be in studio or on the phone?
He didn't tell me what he's doing. It's 1 o'clock. He'll probably be on the phone. I don't know. I'll ask him if he's going to come in for this.
He probably wants to ask for money.
Knowing Lou, he's probably going to bring some, but because he's a good man. He's a good man, that Mr. Fix-It. So, Lou, 3 minutes, first show, first guest tomorrow.
First of all, he doesn't do anything in 3 minutes.
By the way, speaking of not doing things, the Attorney General for the state of Indiana just canceled.
What? We were excited in here.
I know. Elif said he just called 60 seconds ago. Well,
tomorrow,
Lou Manfredini was texting. Is he going to come on tomorrow?
Mm-hmm. Okay. He wants the first spot at 3 o'clock, too.
I'll tell you what, write him a negative review. You'll get him on quicker.
Isn't this amazing? The Indiana Attorney General's office is fielding complaints from people. And here it is. The hotel's policy, this is the Abbey Inn, A-B-B-E-Y, the Abbey Inn in Indiana. I'll get you the city here in a second. It's in Brown County.
South, a little south of Indianapolis.
You know this area, huh?
Ryan was covering the story for ABC this week.
Guests agree that if the guests, this is the language that you evidently sign, the guests will agree that if the guests find any problem with our accommodations and fail to provide us with the opportunity to address those problems while the guest is with us and or refuses our exclusive remedy, but then disparages us in any public manner, we will be entitled to charge their credit card an additional $350. Should the guest refuse to retract any such public statements, legal action may be pursued. In America! I cannot believe that.
Well, what do you mean? You can't believe they can do it? It's just written right there.
I can't believe that would have any standing. And also, it's not folks that sign up for this place, they don't know that they're signing this.
Well, they're signing it, John.
They don't know that they're signing it. And if you said, hey, John, sign this document, it says that I'm going to fly tomorrow, that the sky will be upside down, that doesn't mean that you can fly or that the sky's upside down.
If you sign a document that says you'll pay me $50 if you can't fly tomorrow and you can't fly, you owe me $50.
I'm going to see you in court.
You're going to lose, I think. Because they went after them, not for the state went after them, not for
that
the policy, but because they didn't make the policy public enough.
The people didn't know what they were signing.
And here's the other thing. They cost themselves much more than they gained.
The Abbey Inn?
Absolutely.
Yeah, boy, I ain't going there. In fact, I'm specifically going to call them up and not make reservations.
I was so close to spring breaking in Brown County this year.
It's 242. So the tax bill passes, right? One of the things, and we're all waiting to see how this falls out, is that the mandate for Obamacare is now eliminated.
Right.
I called Elizabeth Rosenthal over at Kaiser Health to try and explain this to us. She is the editor-in-chief at Kaiser Health News. Elizabeth, as always, thank you for your time. How are you today?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me again.
Okay, do I understand correctly? The mandate, as soon as this thing is signed, I guess that's when it's official, in January when it goes into effect, I will no longer be penalized for not purchasing health care, right?
Well, the individual mandate repeal goes into effect in 2019, so there's actually a year of grace period. So.
Or maybe the opposite of grace. In other words,
or the opposite of grace.
I will still have to buy it or pay a penalty if I don't through 18.
Right, right. So you know, I think of course the individual mandate was a component of Obamacare. In fact, it was not something that President Obama himself was very adamant about. What was much more important to him and what he supported was the idea that no one should be denied insurance because of pre-existing conditions. And the mandate kind of followed off of that, because to make that work financially, you have to have young people who might be tempted to try and go without insurance in the pool. So by pulling the mandate, you know, in many ways, the government has created a problem for themselves, because they're still, as it stands now, going to have to make sure that insurers take everyone with pre-existing conditions. And if you let people opt out, it's going to be harder to afford that. So we may have more people getting subsidies. So anyway, the bottom line with this is repealing the individual mandate. We are not sure how that will affect the markets, because think of it another way. The mandate was the penalty for not buying health insurance was in the hundreds of dollars. The cost of health insurance in our country right now is in the tens of thousands of dollars for people. So it's not clear how much that mandate and that penalty influenced people's buying decisions. If people weren't buying insurance, it was probably not influenced by, well, or buying insurance. It wasn't because, oh, we're afraid of this $500 penalty. It, you know, it was because they felt they needed it. And if people weren't buying, they weren't put off by the penalty. It was because the cost was tens of thousands of dollars.
I remember some people saying if you were going to tweak Obamacare, you would have increased the penalty, made it more onerous.
Right. If the penalty had been, you know, in the thousands of dollars, you could say, well, taking it away would really, really change the market. As it was, the penalty was pretty minimal. So it's not really clear that it had much influence on buying decisions anyway. That doesn't mean it's a good thing to repeal it, because now we're going to find out how important was that in real time, and it will be playing out on people's lives. So there will be a cost, but I think most people think it won't be drastically changing the market.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear you talking like this. A year of grace or anti-grace period, and B, maybe not as problematic for Obamacare, because it wasn't generating that much money anyway. But I've seen 3 to 10 million people might now not be in the exchange. Are you estimating numbers like that?
Well, I think it depends. That's where we will see, you know, was that penalty a driver for those people? Will they say, I'm going to drop insurance now that I don't have to pay the penalty?
Yeah.
My suspicion is most people are kind of thinking they really need insurance and they're really going to try and
sure.
have it.
Sure.
And this may backfire on the Republicans, because if those people stay in and they can't afford it, and we still have those individual subsidies, the government may find itself paying more to get those people insured, right? So this is one of those, like, wow, you remove one piece of a puzzle and you see how the rest rearranges itself. And, you know, I don't think anyone knows the answer for sure. But what we've seen as the GOP has tried to pull different pieces of the ACA or Obamacare is that it's pretty resilient. You know, it's been damaged, perhaps, but it people have realized the value of those exchanges of having insurance, and so kind of chipping away at it has not been as kind of disastrous as maybe the intention was or as people have worried.
Well, do you think Obamacare is good even as it is now?
It's better than having nothing, which is what, you know, I think Obamacare from the start was a compromise bill. We all knew that. The president, President Obama knew that. And it did, I will repeat forever and ever that it did some really important things. It guaranteed people with pre-existing conditions health insurance at a reasonable price, and that remains kind of engraved into all of our consciousness and into the law. So that alone, it removed lifetime caps from insurance, which meant that people with chronic diseases wouldn't max out.
Yeah.
And it kind of helped everyone think about insurance as something, as a public good that we should try to achieve. So, you know, it had plenty of warts. It didn't make health care affordable, you know, which is what the next step, whatever kind of system we deal with. And it was a big problem in terms of selling it, because after all, it was called the Affordable
Care Act. Yeah. Okay,
but
hold on.
But it did do some really important things.
Rick has a question for you, and I guess this is kind of on people's minds. Rick, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Hello, John. I'm very honored to be able to join your program today.
Thank you, sir.
My question has to do with for people who opt out under when the new rules kick in, for people who opt out and say, I don't want insurance, and they forego this hundreds of dollars of expense to potentially risk tens of thousands of dollars risk. What happens if they do have an ultimate medical emergency that costs $10,000? Will the rest of us still have to kind of pay for that through subsidies?
Right. They're not going to have insurance. They're not going to be in a hospital, an emergency room, or they're going to get diagnosed with cancer or something, but they don't have insurance. They said, hey, no penalty. I won't even buy insurance. Ha! What happens now, Elizabeth, to those people?
Well, they are putting themselves in a very vulnerable and dangerous position, because they will go back. I think, you know, we might have talked about previously a woman in my book who was uninsured just before Obamacare, was otherwise healthy and suddenly had a brain aneurysm. The hospital, if you are uninsured, has to treat you at the beginning. They have to treat you in the emergency room, but they don't have to give you that follow-up care. And she needed $350,000 of care, of surgery, of rehab, and the hospital went after her and her house and her kids' college savings account. So, you know, if you make that choice, which is a really hard choice now with insurance being so expensive, if you're tempted to say, you know, I, the penalty's gone and I can't afford, you know, the insurance, you know, it's a risky decision. And I understand that it's a fraught decision, because everything in our health system, including insurance, is so very expensive.
But we
now,
think, but we think
many
the answer
just can't afford it.
We think this is what happens, Elizabeth, that you go to the emergency room, you're diagnosed with cancer, and the emergency room or the cancer treatment is going to cost $300,000, and the hospital can't turn you away. Certainly in the emergency room, they're going to treat you. And if you don't have insurance, then all of us pick up that tab. But for some sort of long-term care, would those people not get care because they don't have insurance and can't afford it? Or would they get care and the hospital charges all of the rest of us for the balance?
No, they will get their emergency room care through EMTALA, which is a public service, but they will be billed for all the rest of their care, and unless you have no assets, zero assets, the hospital will go after you.
Huh.
They will go after poor people. They will go after people who have no money.
As maybe they should. I mean,
I don't,
none of us likes that, but if you don't have insurance, you big dummy. It's the difference between insurance and groceries. So then you're buying groceries instead of insurance. You're not a big dummy. You're just in a bad place. I appreciate that, but that's not who we're talking about here. Although maybe we should talk about those people as well. Now, that's a hell of a predicament, isn't it?
It is a predicament. I have one person who said, you know, I can't buy insurance because it's a choice between paying my kids' college tuition at a state college and buying insurance for my family of four, which is costing $24,000.
But Obamacare did not make that insurance affordable for them. And it's going to get more expensive now. But I mean, you know, all of this lovely Obamacare, people still couldn't afford. My buddy was showing me what he's going to pay per month. I was flabbergasted.
This was the flaw of Obamacare, that it helped many people buy insurance. It expanded Medicaid to many people. For low-income people, it opened up many insurance subsidies. But there was a kind of swath of our population, solidly middle-class people who made too much to qualify for subsidies, but too little to really be to be affording this kind of money, and they are, boy, are they stuck right now.
My time is up. Really, Elizabeth stuck. Elizabeth Rosenthal is the editor-in-chief at Kaiser Health News. She is also the author of a book that is fascinating, An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. You got to write an update on that, Elizabeth. Are you working on that, a second edition?
I did an update, and the paperback will be coming out in March, but I did do a forward. But this environment in healthcare is changing so quickly, I'll probably have to do an update to the update in a couple of months.
I'm going to ask you to come on again with us soon. Thanks for your time, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much.
Over at Kaiser Health, Elizabeth Rosenthal. 253 WGN.
Our decorations caught on fire last year while my family was on vacation. Luckily, my neighbors called the fire department. We could have lost everything.
Breathe easier this holiday knowing your home is protected. Alarm Detection Systems offers professional home alarm monitoring 24/7, 365. ADS is an authorized Honeywell security dealer. Visit adsalarm.com or call 630-844-6300. Alarm license number 127-000-143.
If you've got knee pain, listen to Mario Galvin. This is John Williams. Mario had trouble going up and down the stairs, and when he got in and out of his car, he felt that twinge of pain that you've probably felt before, too. And then he went to the Joint Relief Institute in Orland Park. There, they use advanced digital technology to see why and exactly where your knee is bothering you. And they gently place an all-natural joint lubricant into your knee to replace lost fluid. It's not surgery. It's pain-free. It's covered by most major insurance companies and Medicaid. The Joint Relief Institute has 90-plus five-star Google reviews. Call this number, 708-888-0000. 708-888-0000. Mario says, I highly recommend it to anybody who has arthritis in their knee. Is that you or someone you know? 708, that's in Orland Park, 888. You can remember that. 0000, as in zero pain. Thank you, John. Well, let's hear the highly anticipated MJ Miller & Company Holiday Catalog. Sit down before you turn to pages 4 and 5, featuring the Robert Prokop American Glamour Collection. These pieces are gorgeous. They're inspired by the New York supper club scene of years gone by. Images, imagine decades of red carpet sophistication under your Christmas tree. I don't know what you're planning on getting somebody in your family for Christmas that's important to you. You may be thinking about jewelry. You can go a lot of places. If you want an extraordinary, unique collection of ideas that pop, that positively bedazzle. That's MJ Miller & Company. It really is. They're in downtown Barrington. I want you to visit their site, get that catalog, call them up, they'll send it to you, or just go to their store in downtown Barrington. They've got expanded holiday hours for you. That's MJ Miller & Company. They are your trusted family jeweler. I've been there before. I've been there a few times. It's a really fun store. And by the way, if you say, well, I don't have bedazzled dollars to spend, don't worry. If you have, I don't know, $100 to spend at a jewelry store, yeah, they'll treat you very kindly and you'll like what you find there. It's 2:56. Thanks to all of you that watched our live stream on Facebook earlier today. So at the WGN Radio Facebook page, the video is still up and you can still make a donation, as I understand it, to the Salvation Army. We live streamed the Mincing Rascals podcast, and Facebook for us put a donate now button. So while we were doing our normal roundtable about news, we were also applauding and cheering on the donations that were coming in for the Salvation Army. It was a new button that Facebook was testing with us here at WGN Radio today, a donate now button on a live stream. And it went really well. The gang was really, really good on the Mincing Rascals podcast. A lot of energy, a lot of topics to talk about. It was fun to see the gang in play. You can see it now on our Facebook page. And a lot of you are very generous with your donations. So thanks for that. Hi, Rokan.
Hello, John Williams.
Wow, now that's the Rokan I like.
Yeah. Today's looking up. That's the most important thing.
Hey, Judy, write that down. There's your lead. Ro just said, today's looking up, and he seemed to be bright
and chipper
about
it. That is fake news, if I've ever heard it.
That's true. That's probably true.